Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Trojan fans, welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday. We are getting through the final week of USC Spring Football 2021. We're going to talk all about it, what she's seen out there on practices at Howard Jones Field with Keely Orr. Follow on Twitter at Keely is my name. Only two practices left, and then they're off for the summer. They'll do all the offseason workouts, the PRPs, those player-run practices, getting ready for USC fall camp, and of course, that highly anticipated 2021 season. If you have any questions or comments for us, you can email us podcast at uscfootball.com. That's the email address, and we've got a bunch of emails to get to today. You can also leave us a voicemail or shoot us a text. We've got a voicemail to play for you a little bit later on. 424-254-9141 is the number. If you want to get a question up right at the top of the show, go to your Apple podcasting app on your iPhone or your Mac computer, please follow us on the Peristyle Podcast. Leave us a five-star rating, but any kind of questions, comments, or feedbacks you put up there, we will read it right at the top of the show, because that's what Keely Orr does. She's so good at this. She's always on her phone. She knows what's going on. I have an iPhone now. I still can't find where this stuff is, but welcome in, Keely. How are you doing?
Hello, Ryan. Doing well. I think I'm doing better than you right now. You are post-vaccine, so you're hanging in there. I'm proud of you, but I think I'm doing better than you right now.
How the sausage is made. Typically not the case. Like, you know, there's always some little ailment or something Keely's got going on, right?
The roles are reversed today.
But, yeah, I got my second shot yesterday and Moderna, and I felt fine. I got it in the evening. I had a volleyball league that night, and I played. Maybe that was not smart. I do a lot of not smart things, Keely, as you know.
I do know this. But, hey, you were moving your arm. That's what the CDC recommends.
So I did the left shoulder. I didn't do the right. I did the left.
Never mind.
Well, but you still move it, like you're saying, sure. And do all that kind of stuff. But then I woke up this morning and sort of felt kind of crappy. Not like I didn't have a fever. Sort of like a weird headache, but like kind of fatigued. So I don't know. But I was like, so I canceled some things I was doing this morning just to like kind of chill.
Yeah.
But I wanted to come and do the show with you. But if I pass out, that's a problem.
If you hear a large thud, that's probably what happened.
Yeah. But I think I've heard some people that like they were impacted like 2 days later or something too.
Chris was down and out this week.
He got the second shot.
The second one. He was down and out.
Oh.
Because I think you had it. That's why I think you're not as bad.
I think if you had it, you're supposed to make it worse.
Oh, then I don't know what I'm
talking about. I think so. I guess it was January 2019, I had like a horrible fever, like 103 for like a
2020.
Day. Was that 2020?
Yeah, January 2020, you were really sick.
Oh, that was 2020, yeah. But I never had the taste or the smell thing. I don't know.
We'll see. I don't think anyone cares anymore.
I'm really looking forward to, so I give blood every, I do the double red, so I do every 4 months. So you can do, they take like some of the stuff, they take like the red cells out, and then they put some of your plasma stuff back in. It's like a two-step process. They take stuff out, put some in, goes back and forth, but they can take twice as much, and then but you don't give you can't give every 2 months, you give every four.
Okay.
But when I give, I think it's in July, I want to see the antibody, because they test for antibodies at the American Red Cross. So I want to see like positive for antibodies. I'm like, yeah, dude, got the shot. All right.
There you go.
Or two shots. But
well done.
I don't know. Sorry, that's your vaccine talk. So we apologize if you hate the vaccine or
vaccine
whatever.
Tangent.
But, yeah. But I decided to get it, you know, I'm 50.
What?
Yeah, no, I can't believe I'm 50 years old. But yes, got the shot, and we'll see. My arm is sore, but everything else, it's all right. I just don't feel amazing. So if I'm a little off my game today, my apologies. Okay. And we'll see. Maybe there's some reviews that are like a precursor to me being off my game. Maybe they knew that I was off my game today.
Who knows? But we did get two new reviews.
Okay.
Diamond Hand Dan left us a 5-star review that said, "Great stuff. I don't know if I agree with him, but he says Keely carries the whole pod." So thank you. I don't think that's accurate, but thank you nonetheless.
I would, we got an email that seemed to indicate that too. So maybe that's
we're not reading that one.
Okay,
everyone has their opinions. That's fine. David from Behind the Orange Curtain left us a 5-star review. He said, "The best. This has been my go-to site for USC football since 2002. None better. Full stop. Ryan and his team of Coach Keely, Shotgun, and Gerard are the best. Good, honest information. With that said, stock up. You can never replace Dan, but Chris is a good addition to the team, even though I don't get all of his jokes. It's an age thing, I guess. Stock neutral, food analogies, and yes, arguments about stock neutral. Shotgun, in the grander scheme, let it go. Thank you, Dave. Or David, sorry. And then he says, stock down, singing, stick with your day jobs, guys. I agree. I don't like the Herded on the Sidelines intro song. I never approved that to be the intro song, but it is what it is. So,
well, yeah. I was a fan of the Family Feud over there. I like
Thank
it.
You, David. Appreciate
is,
it.
Did he say full stop? That is as his name? Full stop in there? Or it was in the review, it said. So,
yes.
Yeah, so he's a poster. He's been posting on the Peristyle for quite a while.
Yes, I do recognize the
Yeah,
name.
By the name Full Stop. So he's an OG as far, I mean, OG. Almost 20 years, like crazy.
He said 2002.
Yeah, thank you.
Second grade, David.
I was not. But thank you, David, for the awesome review. Thanks, everyone, for really, we appreciate those because they definitely help a lot. And I want to thank our sponsor, Trader Joe's, before we roll into our spring football content. We didn't get to do the show last week. I wanted to tell you guys about the great grilled cheese contest at Trader Joe's. If you want to come up with your own grilled cheese sandwiches, unfortunately, it's now over, but they have the results up.
Okay.
And so they gave away, I think there's some gift cards and stuff. The grand prize went to Maria Johnson. It's an Italian truffle and bacon grilled cheese. It looks pretty awesome. But the cool thing is you go to TraderJoe's.com. If you like the recipe, if it sounds good, they give you the directions and the recipe and everything. It's all stuff you can get from Trader Joe's.
It looks nice.
It does look good. And then the blueberry brie and lemon curd grilled cheese by Christy Chong. That looks, I mean, I love me some brie. And I didn't even think about that. Brie's one of my favorite cheeses.
I've never thought about it in a grilled cheese. Though.
Yeah. But with fruit, it's always good. Mm. So that looks pretty yummy. So
okay, there you go.
I think it's only five ingredients you could have. So it was a TJ's frozen blueberries, honey, TJ's multifloral clover honey, 4 tablespoons of lemon curd, 4 slices of sliced French brioche. So that's for the bread. And then 6 slices of TJ's light brie, and you make them thinly sliced.
Nice.
So you can, like, you could do, I think, oils and butters and stuff. That wasn't an ingredient, but you could only use 5 ingredients. So,
wow.
They give you all the stuff. Yeah, I wanted to talk about it last week, and we didn't get to do the show. So, my apologies. But yeah, that looks pretty cool.
What a fun challenge.
I mean, I love making grilled cheese sandwiches. Just like, I like basic grilled cheese sandwiches. Like, you flip it over. I butter both sides of the bread.
Yeah, you got it. You got it.
Got to butter both sides. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good stuff. Well, Keelior, you and Chaka and Chris, RJ, been killing it over at practice. Make sure you check out uscfootball.com of what's going on, the notes that they've been putting up. You know, instant analysis is always great. Where you guys are on top of a parking structure now, for instance?
Yeah, we're on the parking structure right outside of Dado. So you can see the baseball field behind us. Yeah, so we can take our masks off and be away from people, not get in trouble.
Yeah, because it's pretty strict still on campus. You know?
It is. But it's getting better. I mean, Clay Helton talked about it this week about how all the coaches are vaccinated and the players are getting vaccinated. That's something that they can't control. They can't even ask. Like, the players have to self-report if they get vaccinated. But because, you know, HIPAA and whatnot. But if Helton said that if they do get a higher percentage rate of vaccinations, then they can start to ease on the COVID protocols, which would be nice for them because they've been very strict and following it to the T. So
yeah, well, we USC did announce this week that if you're going to come back to campus in the fall and be on campus, all the faculty, all the staff, all the students would need to be vaccinated. So there was a threat in the Peristyle. There's some people that didn't like that and stuff. I guess if you couldn't for some reason, there was a thing you could file by June or whatever, but the fact that everyone on campus is going to be required to be vaccinated, I just assume people can walk around without masks. The CDC just came out this week and said, like, you know, if you're outside and fully vaccinated, no need to wear a mask, which makes sense. I mean, you know, there just doesn't seem to be a lot of outside transmission, with the virus. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see over the next couple of months. Does practice look different? Are we seeing coaches without masks on out there?
Yeah,
it's sort of, you know, it's kind of creating your own vaccination bubble, I guess. Like, you know, there's no one allowed in there. And even for us, maybe they let us on the field if we show proof of vaccination. Who knows?
Maybe. Who knows? Yeah. But it sounds like it's trending in the right direction as far as protocols and whatnot.
Yeah. So, which is good.
See. Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, USC, I'm vaccinated now. So I'm feeling.
I think we established that.
Yeah. So boom. Got the shot. Yeah, so that was good. So looking at I guess overall, from
yes.
what you guys were seeing, there was this ramp up in physicality up until the spring game. Mm-hmm. And after that, there's been sort of like a confluence of things happening, like a bunch of dudes getting injured, not as many full pads practices left available. I don't think the last two, I don't believe, were going to be full pads. But I think Shotgun described it as sort of, it felt more like a fall practice. I think that was the Saturday one.
That was Saturdays. Yeah. That's the thing is, like, Tuesday's practice was the first practice where I was like, okay, that's kind of like an oldish Helton type of practice where you didn't come away going like, oh, I saw some good things, or like, I mean, you saw some good things, but they just had so many people injured that it really limited what they could do. I mean, we mentioned it on Instant Analysis, but they had two healthy scholarship cornerbacks. Two.
Yeah.
That's not even enough for a second team, like, guys to go on. Like,
not enough for a first team.
Chris Steele was just going out there the whole time. And then you had three fully healthy scholarship wide receivers. It's hard to go physical when you do that. And now here's the thing. I feel like the peristyle is a little bit, like, contradictory, if you will. Not that they haven't been before, but I think, you know, they're clamoring for physicality and physical practices. And this is the result. You know, players are getting injured. And that's just a product of being physical, and we've seen USC not be physical and get injured. So I think you'd rather have what we saw earlier in camp, where they were physical, they went hard, they challenged each other, and you're ending off spring camp with these injuries. And I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's probably a good thing that they had the spring game earlier rather than later, because you'd be limping into that game right now.
I think the game looked pretty good overall. I liked what they did, but you're right. Like, if it was going to be this weekend, you wouldn't be able to have anything like that.
It would be, it would be a glorified practice.
Kerry Colbert wouldn't be out there running routes and Dante Williams trying to cover Katie Nixon or anything like that.
So. Yeah, it was so odd because, I mean, Brew McCoy didn't practice. And so we saw the four jersey walking around and we're like, what? And then he had a helmet on. And I was like, if I didn't know that was Kerry Colbert, I would think that's like, oh, that's a pretty like preferred walk-on like right there.
Nice.
And he still has speed, so.
Preferred walk on, well, we were number four, I guess, but besides that.
Yeah, that's true. But the body shape still, he still has it.
No, yeah, I mean, it sounds like he did better than Dante Williams. But it's a little easier to run around than to try to cover somebody.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
You know, we'll see kind of where they go from here. But it was good. I think it was the timing was good where the spring game was. We'll see. We won't be able to watch Thursday's practice, but they're going to end on Friday. So they'll do a Friday afternoon practice. We'll be able to watch that, and that'll be the final one, not anticipating pads again, but, you know, we'll see how that ends up going. And that'll wrap things up. The injury situation is interesting because, you know, when you change strength and conditioning coaches, I mean, I think that's something that takes a while for things to sort of set in. And, you know, you're working on different muscle groups. I mean, sometimes maybe you're stressing muscles that you weren't stressing before, and then they're in a weird spot. I mean, it would be great if we got some sort of feedback on, here's the situation. We felt like there were this many soft tissue injuries, or there were this many injuries came from contact. I think Shotgun said there was like 40 scholarship players that weren't available. Some of them transfers and things, but
yeah that was it's a full count. That's like guys like Ishmael Sopcich, who we haven't seen all of spring. So it's a little, I think it's overinflated, if you will, the number that he put out, but there were a lot of guys out. But the thing is I don't think, to me, they're not severe injuries. It's not like USC's lost some guys for like the year and the season, like Max Williams, but that's a guy who had already torn his ACL once in his career, and that's easy to do again. So I think they're like minimal things. Like Liam Jimmins, he came out hobbling on Saturday and didn't even have a boot on Tuesday. So I think it's just like, hey, he got his ankle tripped up a little bit. He'll be back. If there was more practice, he'd probably be back soon. So, I mean, I think it is better on the whole. It's just, I think a whole 5 weeks of tackling and actually wearing full pads that wears on the body a little bit. So, I mean, this is what happens.
Yeah, no, I get you. And, you know, typically this is a little different. We were usually, in the last several years at least, seeing a spring break week off in the middle somewhere.
Yeah.
Now, when it was after the first week, that didn't make much sense. But if it was like a week after the spring game, and then you kind of get time to rest up and then come back for 2 weeks, that actually would have made some sense. I was never a huge fan of taking that week off. But if you want to do the spring game in the middle, and then you take a week off and then sort of get everyone ready for the last few, I mean, maybe something like that would be better too. But yeah, it was a little more compact. They didn't have the week off in the middle. You had the spring game. It was sort of like everybody was leading up to that one. And I don't know, maybe if, you know, if the spring game was this weekend, would some of those guys have practiced, you know, just if they wanted to get in the game? It's hard to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they would just be limping into this game. Like, it wouldn't, yeah. I think it worked out the way it should have. And we had to mention too, that the reason why they're not doing full pads is because they reached the NCAA limit. It's not that they're suddenly deciding not to. So it's, they definitely front loaded their schedule in that sense. And on the whole, I think they did a good job of managing the physicality, the intensity, and just designing practice so that it, there was never really any lulls. I think the only time we're seeing like kind of the quote unquote less interesting practices, at least from my vantage point, is because guys are injured and you're not seeing as much competition because you're not seeing like four cornerbacks. You're seeing two. You know, that's a difficult thing to do. So, but yeah.
Yeah, I think I've been critical of some of the decisions that were made over the spring practices over the years, not having like a real spring game. I like the way this one came out. I mean, overall, I like the way it was designed. I think the injury situation sort of worked out that you didn't really have it have as big of an impact on the spring game itself. And now it's having more of an impact, you know, as you go through. I guess the unfortunate aspect, and maybe there's, you know, there's some silver lining to this, but we wanted to see some of the rotating on the offensive line early on. They pretty much kept it the same through the spring game, right? And then the spring game, they picked teams and mixed it up. But now dudes are out. There's injuries. So, we saw Andrew Voorhees play left tackle in the spring game. Oh, we get to see a little bit more of him. Or Jalen McKenzie. Oh, is Jonah Monheim pushing him for right tackle? Well, he's getting to play some right guard. So there's some opportunities there for guys to play other positions. It might be beneficial for some. It might not be as beneficial for others, I guess.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, I know people kind of forgot, but we knew from the start that they were going to do shuffling. We just didn't know when that was going to start. Because I know some people on the P were like, oh, they're shuffling. That means they hate the line. They were going to do that no matter what. Yeah. But I think now in hindsight, on paper, I think they thought that first iteration of the line that we saw, McKenzie, Liam Jimmins, Nealon, Voorhees, and then Cortland Ford. I think that on paper was what they had maybe projected as the first team, and that's why they put so much tape on them, at least in the first half, and then they started mixing and matching. But the fact that Jalen McKenzie hasn't really locked down that right tackle spot, I think is telling, and we've seen more rotating on the right side of the line than we have on the left side, and I anticipated more on the left, you know? And I thought that Casey Collier would get more time. It really has just been Cortland Ford. And I think, and we've heard from Clay McGuire, I think Casey Collier has to have some time to develop. He's having some time. He's having some issues with the playbook and the call. So I think for him, he's kind of out of that race a little bit. And that's why you see Andrew Voorhees. That's why you see a Jonah Monheim getting some time at that left tackle. But I mean, yesterday on Tuesday, we saw Jonah Monheim at right tackle and Jalen McKenzie scoot inside to right guard, which Liam Jimmins was injured. So that's why we saw that. But I kind of like that line. Yeah. I like Monheim. And Chris Trevino brought this up, and I think it's a good point. But having Justin Dedich at that guard spot, either one, I think it's a bonus just because you have another center on the line. You have another guy who can identify calls and has a high IQ on that line. So if you can find a way to get him in there, I think that's a bonus as well. But with Andrew Milik down.
Yeah, so the backup center is
yeah,
out.
So yeah, then, so yeah. Now Dedich is basically just being the second team center. But I think overall, everyone has their strengths and weaknesses. There's not a surefire, hey, this guy's the tackle, this guy's the guard. And I think there needs to be more development, and I think that they just have to practice more and get more experience to really find out, okay, who's the best guy? Because right now, I don't think anyone besides maybe Brett Nealon, you know, is like, hey, that's the guy who's starting in September, you know?
No, that makes sense. As far as the line, you have a new coach. You have Clay McGuire. You can watch the tape from last year. I think this was a good opportunity to kind of see film on a bunch of guys playing different spots. And that's his job, right? I mean, he does this for a living. You know, we can watch practice, but we're not seeing the film breakdowns and all that. We're not in the meeting rooms where guys are understanding concepts or not. Now it's going to be his, you know, he's got all the ingredients and he's got to come up with his stew, whatever the offensive line is, you know, for you want a food analogy there. So, you know,
well done.
We want that offensive line stew. He should have a pretty good idea. He's tasted all these different ingredients in different scenarios, like, oh, this one goes good with this, and see, you know, what they come up with. And I feel like, you know, over the summer, you know, if we get to watch some of these PRPs and see where the guys line up, maybe you do see Jalen McKenzie at right guard instead of, you know, right tackle as much. I don't know. I mean, I think that'll all be interesting and what happens in the fall. But this is sort of like the opportunity for Clay McGuire to come in, get tape on all his dudes. He's got a lot of bodies to choose from. And then, you know, most of them been healthy the whole time. Now figure it out this offseason.
Yeah, I think this spring was always about getting Clay Maguire acclimated to being a Trojan coach. I mean, we've seen it throughout spring. He's gotten more vocal. He's actually a fiery guy. And you couldn't tell that in the beginning because I think he was just getting his sea legs for like, okay, what is the USC practice like? What is it like with the personnel? I mean, yesterday he was yelling at Cortland Ford and we could hear it from the aquatic center. He was like, Cortland, that's inexcusable. That can't happen. And so I think he's definitely getting more comfortable as these guys coach. And I think that's why the tape that he has on the team this spring will be helpful in evaluating. And I think it's just a growth process for him getting to know his players and getting that evaluation down. So I never thought that they would come out of spring knowing who the starting five were going to be, just because it's just not settled and you have a new guy coming in. You need more time than that.
Yeah. You think in Clay Maguire's mind, he might know, or he has a pretty good intent. You know?
He might. See, but the thing is some guys are flashing late. And that makes you wonder, like, why didn't they start rotating earlier? You know, why haven't we seen Jonah Monheim earlier with the first team? That would have been interesting. Like, if he had more reps at this point at camp, what would he look like? You know, so I don't know. We've talked about the strategy all camp, but like, I don't get fully the strategy they had with the rotation and whatnot. But like I said, I think a lot of guys have strengths and weaknesses, but it needs to be developed further. And that's why I can't fully be like, I think this guy should be the tackle or the guard or whatever. You know, I think because we've seen them overall, it's not consistent enough for me to be like, this should be the starting five.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think there's probably different points of view there. I mean, I'd heard from a couple different sources. There were people that were high on Monheim and wanted mm-hmm. him to be the right tackle. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear as much really about Voorhees early on being the left, you know, being out there at left tackle, but it might have just been the spring game that kind of afforded him that opportunity. So I think you're right. I think it's still a work in progress. And the good thing is you got a lot of pieces to this puzzle, and they just kind of have to put it together in the offseason.
Yeah, for sure. Whatever works best and protects Keaton Slovis, that's what you want.
Right. And not just protects Keaton Slovis, but also block for the running backs. And this was a Mike Jenks week, right?
Great transition there,
yeah,
Ryan.
I'm pretty good at this stuff. I've been doing this a while.
Okay.
But thank you for setting up. We were supposed to hear from Mike Jenks a couple weeks ago. There was some weird thing that happened. What was that? So we get these Zoom calls in the mornings of practice. What was the Mike Jenks conference call like?
It was really interesting. You know, I think on the last podcast we did together, I was talking about how like the spring just felt different. And maybe that's because guys are just grateful that they are actually having a spring camp. And he basically said as much. And he said, part of what we're doing this spring is going through tape of last year. And he said, we put on the fall camp tape, like the first couple practice of the running backs. And he was like, we looked around in the room and said, how the hell did we get to the Pac-12 championship? You know, and we heard from Vi Malapai, who was like, it was really weird. We thought the season was canceled. Then we came back and then we had to work out in groups. We couldn't even like see the offensive linemen until games. Like, that's not very helpful or conducive for a great like team chemistry atmosphere. And yet, like Mike Jenks said, they got to the Pac-12 championship. So it was a lot of that where they were saying like, they're just so excited that this staff and this iteration of the staff can have a spring, have a summer, and then have a fall camp. Jenks was like, if we can have all three of those, like, who knows what we can be. So I think they're excited about like the work that they can actually put in. Vavai Malapai, I said that he was like, I've been here a really long time, and this is the most physical spring camp I've ever had. So
good to hear. Yeah.
Yeah. And both Carr and Vi, they're healthy this spring. That was big. I mean, Carr got a little banged up yesterday, so I think it was a jinx that they were talking about it. No pun intended. So, I mean, and a lot of talk about Keontae Ingram, and that's a guy who I think, Ryan, you and I identified from the beginning. We were like, he's a dude. Yeah. And so a lot of talk about him and what he's brought to the table. And then I know there was a lot made about the interview Mike Jenks did with the LA Times about how he said he wanted like one back and he wanted to, you know, not have as much as a committee. And he kind of didn't even remember what he said in the interview. So it made me wonder, like, okay, how much of that is true? So we'll see on that. But apparently he's been prepping the room like, hey, you're not going to get as many carries. We're going to have like one to two guys get the bulk of the carries. And so Vi was like, hey, it makes the competition better. So we'll see. But I don't know how much coach speak now to take out of that if Jenks can't even fully remember what he said.
Yeah, it's funny. So, I mean, we do this all the time. So we put ourselves out there on shows. You know, we do a bunch of podcasts. You do television.
I'll say, I understand.
Yeah, because we'll say something. You're like, I can't believe you said, and I'm like, I said that? Like, I don't think I said that. Or you might have said some sort of version of it. And that definitely happens. You're in an interview. You might have been your third interview in a row or whatever.
Yeah, and like, you're just saying things.
He says something, which, you know, maybe it's out of context. It's hard to say. But then sometimes it's like, okay, this is a soundbite, and we're going to latch onto this. Boom, set in stone. There's something written on the war room wall. USC will go with a single back. It's like, that just wasn't the case. You know, even though he said those words, and as a reporter, you're like, you know, maybe there's a follow-up or something, but, it, you know, that's – your interview subject said that, you know? So it's like – but then sometimes you don't realize what people are going to latch on to. It doesn't always – like, well, you know, slow your roll a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt there. It was going to be tough.
It's one thing if Jinx was somehow tweeting it every week versus, like, he said it once in an interview and then we all clung on to it. You know, it's I think it's a little different in that sense. So I think we'll just have to see. And we've been seeing a lot of two-back sets. So, like – we'll see how that goes, but I think Keyonte has really raised the competition level this spring, and Jinx even mentioned Brandon Campbell. He's done so as well. I mean, I think he has a hamstring injury, so he was out on Tuesday, but I think just having some fresh faces in that position group has kind of livened up the reps a little bit, and I've talked about this before, but I think spring camp for running backs in particular is a little – it's just kind of – 50%, 75%, you're not going full speed, but I think they definitely raised the bar this camp. And so I think Keyonte and BC, who they call Brandon Campbell, definitely elevated that this year.
I think so too. Yeah, it's like, so if Dante Williams said, you know, in an interview, take back the West, and then later on was like, I don't even remember saying that. Well, you use that in your hashtag on every one of your tweets. So that's a little different.
Like, yeah,
it's like Jinx wasn't doing that.
Yeah.
And I would this be analogous to if you went to USC football practice and someone just said, you don't know any of the players, doesn't matter who anyone is, and you just said, watch the running backs, who do you think's the best? Like, I bet you a lot of random people would go, Keyonte, that 28 guy, like, he looks like he's the best. And that's just, you know, looking at it from, you know, it's like, he was just impressive to me from the beginning. I love the way Carr ran in the spring game. You know what Vise can do. He's, like he said, he's been around there forever, but I mean, you know, Brandon Campbell, BC, you know, threw his hat in the ring, but I feel like Ingram just made a pretty big splash in these first, you know, few weeks.
Yeah, he's brought something different. And I know Chris Trevino and I differ on that opinion, but I know Isaiah Pulumau said, like, he's a tough hitter. He brings something different to the running back room. And, you know, Stephen Carr's a gamer. I think that's why we saw what we saw in the spring game. I think he just turned it on. And he said on Tuesday, like, I just have a different mindset. This is kind of my last go. And so he's bringing a definite new intensity, at least from a mindset perspective. So, I mean, I think USC can't go wrong with who they have right now. It's just keeping them healthy. That's really the main thing. And that's what Mike Jinks said as well. Like, he was like, I remember when we had one healthy back, when we had to, like, bring in Amon-Ra St. Brown, you know? So I think it's good for USC to have as many backs as they have right now, considering transfers and injuries and whatnot. So,
yeah. We didn't hear from any defensive people yet. I forget who's tomorrow on the slate.
It's Snyder, so we actually won't hear anymore.
Oh, so no more defense. So we get special teams. Anything kind of stand out the last couple? I mean, obviously the quarterback situation, cornerback is fairly dire with only a couple guys out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, overall, I think what Todd Orlando's been able to do, I think what he said was powerful about we want to install the culture, like our desired culture needs to be installed in the off season. And you could just say that's coach speak, but I think we saw it. Like that really was what happened. And I feel like he backed up everything he said about that, which is, you know, credit to him, credit to the coaching staff for being able to adapt that. I feel like it was a different kind of spring and started on the defensive side of the ball.
No, I agree. I completely agree. They meant what they said when they were talking about physicality. It wasn't one of those normal USC phrases that sounds good in a tweet. Like, they actually brought it.
Iron sharpens iron or whatever. It's like, wait, what? Okay.
Yeah, no, they actually brought it. And you could tell that the whole defensive staff was united on that front. Like, it wasn't like there was a weak link. It was everyone has been screaming at everyone, you know? And I think it's permeated throughout the entire team. We've heard from offensive guys who said, we've seen that the defense is bringing it and we're trying to do the same, you know? And we've seen Clay Helton really, like, light a fire underneath the offense because they're just sometimes not matching the intensity of the defense. And I think they're a united group, you know? It's weird because I feel like the offense is kind of more in flux right now than the defense. even though I don't think that's necessarily accurate. I just, from a like a culture and like a vibe sense, if you will, I just feel like the defense is more just together and has more continuity. So, yeah, so I definitely think that they meant what they said when they talked about physicality, and we've seen it this spring. So definitely the defensive staff has been leading the way on that one.
Yeah. You like to do this to shotgun at the end.
Yes.
Any final thoughts
any before final we thoughts? Go? And that was technically a Dan thing. And Dan saying he'd say no and then go into a final thought.
Shotgun does the same thing. So if you watch Instant Analysis, Shotgun, any final thoughts on spring practice? No. And then just goes into a thought. Yeah, like, it's always like a no.
Yeah,
like,
it's I don't know why. It's just a thing.
Not really, but blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many thoughts. But I was saying this last practice to the guys. I was like, I just feel like I'm waiting for like a receiver to come back from the injured list, which is not like there are injured receivers, but I feel like USC is just missing someone. And yeah. It's not the case. I mean, like, of course it'll feel that way if you don't have Amon-Ra St. Brown anymore, or you don't have a Michael Pittman or a Tyler Vaughns, but I just feel like they're missing a guy and someone needs to step up in that role. And, you know, Michael Jackson, I call him Mike Jack, even though that's not really his name.
That's his Twitter, right? Yeah,
I think so, yeah. And so he's been injured a little bit. Brew McCoy, we've seen in and out. And I think Brew McCoy will definitely take a step up going forward. And Gary Bryant, when he's healthy, that will be he'll be a major contributor there too as well. But I just feel like there's just something missing. And I know USC is going to get Taj Washington soon. But I just feel like Katie Nixon hasn't been consistent enough.
Yeah, he could have been the guy.
He could have been the guy. He just hasn't.
He might still be.
Might still be, true. But he hasn't, like, contributed in the way that I thought maybe he would have or USC anticipated him to contribute. So that's something that I think is a little disappointing there from a USC perspective. But I just think that there's a oomph missing from that wide receiver group, and I don't know what it is. Like, it's just, I feel like it's a lot on Drake London's shoulders right now. But how much of that is injuries? How much we'll see full speed? I don't know. I think Jackson Dart has kind of separated himself a little bit from Miller Moss. I think this is another thing I was trying to figure out, like trying to get the right phrasing with the guys yesterday, because I was just like talking through practice, and I was like, I feel like Jackson Dart just has this different type of confidence or like comfortability. Both Miller Moss and Jackson Dart had the same familiarity with the system at this point, but I feel like Jackson Dart sees it as like a more a challenge he can accomplish. I don't know. It's just this kind of bravado you can just sense when you're seeing them out there. And so that's what I've been picking up on, and I don't want everyone to go and take and run with that, because I know they did that with Keely, the spring game.
Yeah.
But I do think he has a sense of confidence that you can see in his play style. So, and that's kind of separating him a little bit from Miller Moss. But like, yeah. I said, I've been protective of the young quarterbacks, because I feel like everyone's staring them down and wants to know exactly what they're doing every single practice, even though they've only had 13 practices at Trojan. So,
right.
Grain of salt, people. But that's my early evaluation of that. But
yeah, it's funny. Like, you wonder if in the spring game, if Miller Moss was on Keaton Slovis's team and Jackson Dart was on the other team,
what would that look like?
Maybe you feel like Miller Moss is the guy. Yeah. Maybe he gets more confidence from doing that as opposed to just getting beat up and not having any.
Exactly.
Maybe Jackson Dart does it. Or maybe Jackson Dart like takes it and runs with it and goes bananas, you know? Or I mean, who knows? But yeah, it's very situational. So it's definitely hard to say.
Yeah, and Miller Moss played so much because Mo Hassan went down. You know, what if you see Jackson Dart with that much time? Maybe he doesn't look as great. The sample size is larger, you know? So
yeah.
It's spring. Don't go too far. But
you know, it's funny, too, because we heard reports from, I think it was the Thursday after the spring game, like Moss threw like 5 touchdowns in practice or something, like had like an amazing practice.
Oh, really?
Or something. Yeah, there's like, well, we don't get to watch that. So, you know, it's weird. But it is nice that we're at least getting to watch 2/3 of the practices. You can see the guys warm up, and you can see, you know, hey, if I think that's something you can sense. Like, if I trust your eyes are seeing, if you're looking at a group of guys and one of them just looks to be more confident than the other ones, like, yeah, I mean, you've seen enough of this, and, you know, that's, I think you know what you're talking about.
Thank you for your stamp of approval, Ryan. Yeah. No, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's just what I sense. You can just see he's kind of, even when he's scrambling, it seems like he's trying to engineer something. And I don't want to use the Sam Darnold phrase. It's not there, but it's reminiscent. There are flashes of Darnold-isms, if you will.
Yeah.
Well, don't get funny. Too excited, people.
So either one of those guys, I think they're athletic enough. Probably Dart's a little more, right?
Yeah.
But That was one thing we couldn't tell in practice with Darnold. Because, you know, when Vic Soto yells sack, like, well, in a game, Sam Darnold wasn't sacked. In practice, he was sacked.
Yeah.
But when in a game, it's not like, oh, he got away and ran for 2 yards. Like, oh, that's nice. Instead of a 4 yard loss, it's a 2 yard gain. He would get away, have his eyes downfield, and find somebody for 25 yards. Yeah, it's like, that's like, a huge difference than a sack. You know?
Yeah, no.
And we didn't see that till he was in a game.
Exactly.
So it's hard to say, like, oh, was Jackson Dart, was he going to like throw a touchdown pass there? Instead, he was sacked. You know?
Yeah. And one thing that I forgot that I think needs to be mentioned is that Jackson Dart did have a senior season. He did play.
Right, that's
whereas
true.
Miller Moss did not. So, I mean, maybe that's I'm being a little harsh there because there is some experience, more experience underneath Dart's belt than Moss. You know, this is kind of him playing his senior year while Dart is kind of adding on to it. So,
I mean, Dart's probably not at USC if he doesn't play a senior year,
he's
right?
not. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he came onto the scene. I mean, junior year, he kind of was like, it was a simmer, and then senior year, it was a boil. So,
yeah.
But, so quarterback watch, there's that. Defensive line, guys are getting injured, so we haven't seen as much, but I think that's a really promising group.
Sure.
I think Vic Soto has done a good job developing guys. It's unfortunate that Kobe Pepe has been injured for basically the entirety of camp, because I thought he was flashing well, but Tuli Tuipulotu, that's a guy who, you ask anyone on the offense and they're like, that guy's a freak, you know? And so I think he's continuing that freshman year intensity that he had. And then, you know, I'm Stanley Tauafu, Jay Toya. Those are guys who just, I think they just have a good mindset. They're just, they're really fired up and you can tell that they come to practice wanting to play and wanting to get in there. So I keep saying I'm really intrigued by that group. I think they're a fun group. And with Vic Soto kind of like pumping them up with his energy that he has, I think it's a promising group.
This is only Vic Soto's fifth year being a full-time assistant coach. Three at, Virginia, right? With
Mendenhall.
Yeah, with Bronco Mendenhall. And then, you know, last year, kind of a shortened year. I feel like if you look at USC's recruiting over the years, like on the lines, like sometimes there's this, you know, random three-star guys that look like they have potential and maybe never do anything. You know that Jay Toufele came in. He was like at all the camps. He was a five-star guy and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then some of the other guys like a Tuli Tuipulotu, not as well known, or a Jay Toy, you know, some of those guys. I think it's a great sign for a position coach when those guys that come in that have the potential that maybe aren't highly ranked move forward and they get better. And I think some of the assistant coaches at USC over the years, those guys have just sort of been like, oh, you're a three-star guy? You're a three-star guy in school.
Yeah.
You see a good guy like Vic Soto develop. I feel like he's doing a good job of developing these guys.
I think so, too. And I mean, I mentioned this on the Family Feud podcast, but I think Jay Toya should get the credit that he deserves because, you know, he's kind of the sleeper guy of the 2021 class because he committed as a sophomore in high school. You know, when you're the first guy to commit in a class and you're a defensive lineman, people are kind of like, yeah. Okay, who else? Who's the flashier guys in
like
this
how
class?
How big are you? Are you 225 right now?
Yeah, like people, it's just not flashy, but he's a guy who has come in as an early enrollee and been immediate impact. And so I think that's big too. So yeah, I think Vic Soto should get a lot of credit because he's really pushing guys. And it seems like from what we've seen that what he means about how you practice, the work you put in, that will show up with your playing time. And I mean, it's probably worth mentioning now that Caleb Tremblay entered the NCAA transfer portal. That's something I had heard about like a week out before he announced it, just because, you know, he was not at the spring game. I was kind of like, okay, if he's missing all these practices, what's happening? And then I kind of heard he got cold feet and then he decided to enter the transfer portal. But that's something where, from what I've heard, it was just like an effort thing. And that's something where Vic was kind of like, hey, this is the standard here at USC and you have to meet it or else your playing time will reflect that. So I think that's the case that with what happened there. And then you have other guys coming in the fall. It just, I think it was, he felt the need to go to the portal in that sense.
Yeah. I should do a better job of like getting the news stuff at the top because that's kind of newsy, right? Like,
yeah, that is.
Entering the transfer portal, Caleb Tremblay. Well, I'll update that. I need to update the scholarship distribution chart because there's been some position changes and some guys that are transferring out, things like that. So we'll try to keep that updated for you. Usually, like when spring football ends, we'll kind of give a final spring update of everything that's going on there. But wish Caleb Tremblay the best. He was always good dude to cover.
Really
and
nice,
stuff.
Yeah, really nice guy.
Nice dude, but I like overall what Vic Soto's doing. You know, sometimes you hire a position coach, you're like, yeah, I think that guy gets it, you know? Not necessarily being, oh, he's going to be a defensive coordinator or head coach someday. Maybe he will, I don't know. But at first, you just want someone that's good at their job. And he seems to be If you had to go, I think he's a really good defensive line coach, you know, even though he's only been doing this a few years.
I mean, he just has the personality, and you can tell he has the confidence that he knows he's good at what he does. You know, I forgot what the quote was, but he was like, it's my job to get these guys in here. I think he was talking about Corey Foreman coming in as a fall enrollee, and he was like, I got to get these guys up to speed, and I'm pretty damn good at it. That was his quote, and we're like, okay, you do your thing, you know? So, yeah, I think he just has the passion, the energy. I mean, there have been some Trojan drills where he's accidentally in the mosh pit of guys because he's just in there so close to the action. So I know. I think one of the defensive coaches said he's a superstar in the making as far as a coach. And so far we've seen him get a lot out of his guys and really bring that intensity every practice. So I think that's a good guy to have on your staff.
I think there's a lot of things that can make a great coach. I mean, sometimes it's an X and O guy. Sometimes you're just not as personable, but they know football really well. They can put you in the right position. They might be a little rough around the edges, like the Belichicks or the Nick Sabans of the world. But there's other guys, too, that, you know, you have to – I think you can't – you know, Vic Soto wouldn't be good being a Nick Saban type. He's a good relate-to-people type, you know. Ed Orgeron won a national championship as a coach, but he was a great people person. He related to people well. I think you just have to be true to your personality,
yeah.
And he's been that. And – we'll see what he's, you know, able to, you know, go forward and doing. But I think he's proven himself as a defensive line coach. And that's a good, you know, it's a good young hire. This was a out of the, you know, not really connected to anyone hire.
Yeah.
Like, remember Dylan McCullough when, you know, yeah. when USC brought him in. You're like, wow, he's a really good. He's back in Indiana, by the way.
I know.
He's really good. And the whole point we were saying before when I would be critical of the hires is just get someone that's good at their job. Not
yeah.
someone you know. Someone that's good at their job. If you happen to know him, that's great. But Dylan McCullough was like, wow. He's a running back coach in Indiana. The team's pretty terrible, but they're recruiting four-star athletes out of the SEC and getting them away from like Auburn and LSU.
Yeah.
He's probably good at what he does, you know?
Yeah.
Vic Soto, the same thing. You've seen that.
I mean, it's the little things too. I mean, in his Zoom conference, he asked Thule, like, what's the expectation of the defensive line? And Thule just recited it. And you're yeah. like, okay, he means business with his group. And then, like, even during practice, when there's special teams and there's downtime, the defensive line guys aren't in special teams. Like, that's not really their thing. And Soto has them on the side doing reps of, like, hand placement and stuff like that. And so it's just getting the most out of your guys in the time that you have. And so that stuff really stands out to me because we've seen guys just not really utilize the time. And I think he does that well.
All right. Well, I thought it would be a short opening segment.
Sorry, I'm not talking so much.
Please do not apologize. You're doing a great job delivering all the news. All right. Why don't we take a quick break and we'll come back and do some questions. Back in a minute. It's funny. It sounded a little slow to me, like when it was being played. Is that funny? Did that music sound a little slow to you?
Well, because we probably listened to it in 1.5
speed. I was going to say, yeah. When you listen to the show, you listen to it a little faster.
That's like if I listen to Raina Troy at normal speed, they sound drunk now to me.
It is funny, yeah, with some of the – and even just like music when people have intro music to stuff. And
yeah.
You're like, oh, that doesn't sound quite
yep.
right. Or you listen to people, you know. All right. Let's see. Why don't we start with the voicemail?
Sure.
And we'll get to all the... This
go
is a two-part voicemail. We'll start with this one.
Okay.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control all desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hello, this question's for Ryan and Keeley. And I was just wondering if you guys think that maybe part of the reason for the delay in the conference commissioner search is that some of these guys might, or and gals, might be worried that there might be a conference realignment coming up pretty soon. And if that happens and the other conference commissioner is the one who's held on, then, you know, they could be out of a job within the next couple of years. So it's like a job that they take and then, you know, could be gone. So I was wondering if, one, that is part of maybe what's going on and creating some hesitancy for some guys and gals, and then Also, I was wondering, what do you guys think about the likelihood of a Pac-12, Big 12 realignment? It seems like, you know, you create a division with eight from each conference, have an East and a West, and, you know, you kind of only play up the other teams like once every 5, 6, 7 years, similar to the SEC. But you can get some pretty cool games out of it, create a super conference, and have a much better chance to CFP. So anyways, was wondering what you guys think about both those things. Fight on, Jason, along with country.
Jason. Thanks. So I'll give you some thoughts, and we'll get Keely's thoughts too. So, no, I don't think the reason it's been a four-month search is because someone's worried about getting a job and then conference realignment. Like, if you were the president of the Big East a few years ago and you were Power Five and then it blew up, I don't think that's the case. I think a lot of it's incompetence.
It's the
Pac-12. You're trying to get all the presidents and chancellors on the same page. All of the power brokers right now, as far as the guys on the committee or, you know, the people on the committee, are up in the Pacific Northwest, but you got the most watched schools like in California. So there's definitely some differences there. John Wilner, John Canzano has done a great job covering this. Wilner especially, his latest report showed that according to his sources, they were looking to maybe have a co-commissioner, which, if it sounds like a terrible idea off the top of your head, if you read for a little bit and then think about it, it gets even worse. So you would have someone that would be more like the Larry Scott role, which you should get as far away from the Larry Scott role as possible. The biggest problem with Larry Scott was he was a Harvard-educated tennis player that wanted to focus on the Olympic sports, not realizing that football drives the bus, right? The SEC is now winning more championships in Olympic sports. You know why? Because football, like, it's actually, if football was good in the Pac-12, it actually helps the Olympic sport. So not putting focus on that, not having someone that understood football, hiring your football people that didn't understand football under Larry Scott, there were so many mistakes that were being made. But to go down the same path where you have one person that's going to be like the business person, like the Larry Scott role, and the name he put out there was Amy Brooks. So she played basketball at Stanford, and she's NBA's president of business operations and chief innovation officer. No college campus experience, no football experience. That's a non-starter for me. But on the other side, you would have someone that's more of a college campus liaison. So you have this like co-commissioner thing, which, you know, you want football, I mean, food analogies, like too many cooks in the kitchen. Two is too many. You need someone that's like, you need good people around it, but you need someone calling the shots, you know? Like if Amy Brooks was like working for the NFL, like, yes, boom. And she worked on college campuses. Dude, put her in there. That's fine. The fact that she's working for the NBA and has no football experience, like, no. Like, I don't think you could have anybody like that. You have to get as far away from the Larry Scott model as possible. And this is sort of like a stepping stone to get away from Larry Scott. Like, you just have to, like, get away completely. And Canzano goes off on it on his latest column. I thought it was pretty good. But it's taking a while. And I think there's definitely some concerns there. As far as conference realignment, I think it's going to be tough. Right now, there's a lot of talk about expanding the playoff.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much with the current model of the five conferences. I don't think the Big 12 and the Pac-12 could just say, we're going to join up, because you're going to leave people behind. And it's not just about athletics. Like, if you remember back the alignment where the Pac-12 tried to get Texas and Oklahoma and all that stuff, there are governors, there are, you know, politicians in all of these states that will go bananas if you try to, like, if you were going to take Texas out and then you left Texas Tech behind, like other state schools. I think the same thing was happening in the Midwest. Like, there are going to be people that protect these schools. And I think the Yahoo Sports podcast was doing a good job of this. Like, Pete Thamel was talking about it a little bit. I think that's who I was listening to. But when you think about, like, USC has, what, a $7 billion endowment right now, right? Yeah, they just had $1 billion settlement and all this stuff. The football budget's like $130 million. College football is huge. The athletics are huge. I mean, the athletic budget is huge. But it pales in comparison to what the university makes and all of that. And for you to, like, if Texas leaving is going to hurt enrollment at Texas Tech, that's a major, major financial hit for the state, you know?
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of political factors. If you're only looking at it from football, like, let's take the best football programs and put them all in a tournament. It's like, that's great. Like, that would be cool. We saw the Super Conference thing, what, blow up, right? The European thing, they tried to do that.
Super League.
The Super League. They, yeah, they, it was very American. Like, it was like, a lot of people said, this is a very American idea.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool. I don't know soccer. I'm like, yeah, that seems cool. No, don't do that. So they, all the fans hated it. And you get it because the small village or whatever in the small city in the UK, I'm getting the wrap up like that. The small, you know, village in the UK, like, they grew up, you know, loving this football, I'll call it a football club, this football club, and now they're just, like, out of it, you know? And
yeah.
I do like the relegation factor, so they could probably do something with the Super League but also get relegated in and out of it. I don't know. But I think you would have some of the same issues, but there's all the states, all the governors and the senators and all this stuff, there would be a lot of pushback from them if you're getting, you know, if Oregon was joining and Oregon State wasn't. The governor is not going to like that very much. Yeah.
See, but I think that also speaks to the issue in general, because I don't think the fight from Oregon would be as strong as, Alabama governor. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I hate to use the phrase, but it means more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the problem, I think, with this search, is that it's done by the academic sides of things. And they are not, especially on the West Coast, very sports minded. Because why aren't they going, hey, let's go out and get the best. Let's make the Pac-12 a person who knows college football, knows how to run the business side of things. Let's get them in there. Now they're thinking about, like, let's have two roles and do this. It's just like, you don't know what your conference needs if you're going that route. And so, I mean, it just doesn't seem like a good environment for them to make the right decisions because they just don't care as much.
I think that's a fair point. Canzado pointed out, like, we've seen this model work at other conferences where, not the model Pac-12, there's a proven model, and you have your commissioner. You know, they have to know the sports world. They have to know college football. They have to know the campuses. And you can hire consultants. You can hire people to work with the TV partners and all that. You don't need a TV executive to run everything. You can get people to do that. That model's working. We saw the model work in the Big 10 network and the SEC network of, hey, partner with ESPN or Fox, and you're going to go make a crap load of money. The Pac-12 didn't do it. You know, they were, oh, we're going to do our own thing. Yeah, that was terrible. That did not work out at all. You've seen a model work in these other conferences. Like, you should probably follow them. And I know you want to say the Pac-12 is different and all that. But, I mean, yeah, okay, is it hard to get into Stanford if you're a student-athlete? Yeah. You know, it's hard to get in, like, Vanderbilt. Is it, like, significantly different to get into, like, Arkansas as an Oregon State? Like, I don't think so. It's probably about the same, you know? Like, I think the Pac-12 is looking at itself as, like, this holier-than-now thing. And I just – you got to compete, you know? There's a – we know what the playing field is. Your ass has been beaten on this playing field. I know you're trying to change it and try to make – you know, let's focus on rowing. It's like, no. Like, that's – I get it. You're good at rowing, but you can't focus on that, so.
Yeah, I wasn't necessarily knocking the model. I'm knocking my belief in the Pac-12 itself to execute said model. Like, do what works, and don't try and think out of the box. You tried that? No.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. Just.
It's literally, we have a whiteboard right in front of us. It was like, okay, let's make some suggestions on who you should hire. All right, one, do they know football? Make a flow chart, okay? Do they know football? Yes? Okay, we'll look at them. No? Well, throw it in the trash.
Not even that. Do they understand that football drives the bus?
Yeah.
You know? Is that important to them?
Yeah, that's the first stage. Yeah, do they understand football drives the bus? Yes. Okay, move on. Do they know football? No? Okay, you're out. I mean, I think it's that simple. Like, you have to fix football. Like, you have to fix football. You hire someone that's an NBA person that's never worked on a college campus and that doesn't have anything to do with college football. That's a mistake from the very beginning. Like, it's just, that is.
I can see where it could work, but given how you struck out with Larry Scott, you don't have the leverage to make a, like, maybe riskier move like that. Now you have to go with someone who's proven, because you can't waste more time.
No.
Like, you can't waste the credibility that you've already wasted with your conference.
Yeah.
You know? We actually have another question about this topic. It's from Eric in Duck Countries, who I don't think we've heard from in a while. So welcome back,
Eric.
He says, with TV contracts coming up, do you think the new Pac-12 commissioner and the other ADs will want Clay Helton gone? USC with a big-time head coach would demand way more money than they could now. Will Pac-12 schools end up losing millions of dollars because of Helton? Eric in Duck Country.
I mean, I think for the most part, you're at the University of Oregon. You're taking care of your own stuff, right? If you're, I think every school has their wish list of what you want. And if USC has a head coach that's not maybe up to the standard of a top five all-time program, I don't think Mario Cristobal cares. I don't think, the administration at Oregon cares. You're Washington State. Do you care that USC's coach isn't the greatest? No, you're trying to get, do what you need to do. Well, maybe we can beat them every once in a while. What does Washington State want? Well, I want to be able to take trips to Southern California. I want to get equal revenue share. Like, they're all going to have different demands. And that's part of the issue with all of this is if you're USC or UCLA, you're like, hey, we're bringing in, you're Ohio State. You're bringing in, it's like something like 45% of the TV revenue is like because of Ohio State football for the whole, Big Ten.
Yep.
Now, they get a huge chunk, so it's not as bad. Like, okay, I'm getting Rutgers a lot of money, but we're making a ton of money. The Pac-12, you're not. So if you're the program making the most money, then you have more of a complaint, right? And but you're Washington State. You want to make sure you're getting the same amount that UCLA's getting or Washington's getting. So I think every AD across the conference has different wish lists and different priorities. I don't think they're going to be, there's not going to be an AD meeting that says we need to get rid of Clay Helton across the Pac-12. Like that just seemed very pie in the sky.
I also don't think that USC's administrators would really appreciate other ADs telling them what to do with their own athletic department. I don't think that would go over real well.
It's funny. It'd be like, okay, so we're going to go into Tim Tesloan's office. all of the people all the USC media people are coming in there and we all have a meeting, I like Ryan Carsey, so we'll talk about him. We'll have a meeting like, guys, the LA Times, I just think you need a better writer than Ryan Carsey. We all agree. Like, Reign of Troy, we all want Ryan Carsey. I was like, no. Like, no,
this is not real. This is an example.
We love you, Ryan. We're just kidding. But I'm just saying. But, like, yeah. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, I'm trying to picture, like, is that a terrible example or just like, besides, we're not trashing Ryan. We're just saying,
people always misconstrue things. So I just hate even going there. But
if anything, Keeley does not like Ryan Carsey. Is what I'm saying.
Ryan, why do you always start things?
Someone clip
such
that.
A troll. Such a troll. No. No. But yes, I don't think USC, I think that would make USC more resistant if they have other schools in the conference being like, hey, you should do this with your coaching. No, that's not how it goes.
Yeah. We love you, Eric, but that's
okay.
I'm going to put that.
No, don't be snarky.
Okay, all right. I would disagree, Eric. I won't be snarky.
That's fine. You can disagree. That's fine. We got a question from our buddy Stephen Poway, who says, dear Keeley and Ryan, I've thought more than once that USC may have already hired their next head football coach, and his name is Todd Orlando. He provides the toughness element that Clay Helton has lacked, and he's brought in an outstanding team of defensive coaches around him. I know there's no head coach vacancy at USC right now, and I also realize if it happens, USC could turn to someone outside of the program, but did anyone else find the structure of Saturday's scrimmage pitting OC against DC at least a tad bit quote-unquote interesting in a larger context? Fight on and win in 2021.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for that. I mean, he was a hot assistant a couple years ago, right?
Yeah.
And then he sort of became like a sacrificial lamb for what we heard at Texas, and he gets fired. But then, they fire Herman the very next year anyway. So I think he got a little bit of a bad rap at his way out at Texas. I mean, I think he might be a great head coaching candidate, but just because he brought tougher practices doesn't, like, okay, well, he should be a head coach. There's got to be a lot of other factors. He might have all of them. I don't know. But I think there's just, you're kind of latching onto one factor that was like, this team hasn't been tough. That guy's tough. Hire him. Like, there should be a lot of other things that would go along with, being the next head coach. To me, it's an uphill battle if you want to hire an internal assistant at USC for the next 20 years. Like, don't do that. Like, I think you have to hire someone from outside the program. You've failed miserably at hiring the already on the roster people. So you would have to know that Todd Orlando is like legit, like for 100% sure, for me to want to agree to something like that. I think you have to just like, you know, you, you, this virus, we were like err on the side of caution a lot of times. I think you just sort of like, yeah, don't hire anyone that's already here. If you're going to make a head coaching change, he's great. I mean, I think he's a really good defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, to me, being here like a year and a half, that's a bit of a stretch.
I think he likes being a defensive coordinator. And there's so you have to be so above as a head coach that I think Todd Orlando enjoys the ins and outs of being a defensive coordinator, being with the defensive players too much to like that maybe. Now, who knows? I haven't talked to him specifically about this. But also, and Steve, I mean this in the utmost respect, I think it's a little bit of damaged USC fan syndrome here because, you know, if you've just been eating beans year after year, season after season, you see maybe like a piece of bread and you're like, bread is good. And yeah. So, no.
Let's make that the main meal.
let's have a real meal, Steve. I think that will be good for USC fans. So, and again, this is a different athletic administration. And so it's not going to be the, hey, let's pick within the litter and pick a new person. I don't know. That sounds bad. I didn't mean litter in like a bad way. No, I think they're going to do things differently. And the fact that this administration picked Todd Orlando probably means that they will pick well as well if you like Todd Orlando.
Yeah, and it could very well be. It'll be so this offseason, we're going to try to do some of that lunch with a Trojan stuff that we were doing before. Is this bad? I don't remember if I had Todd Orlando on one-on-one. I kind of think I did.
I think you did.
I think I did. So I'm
old.
It was
the beginning of the pandemic. I will give you a break.
I'm old. I forget things. But that's a good, you know, so now that he's been around a while, like you were asking a certain line of questions and, you know, you see how he's got his first spring was going and the installing of that kind of culture he wanted. I think he was successful in all that stuff. So that would be interesting to talk to him about. But also, like, hey, what are your, you know, aspirations? Like, do you want to be the defensive coordinator at USC for the next 15 years? Or you would love to be, you know, head coach. We know, like, Graham Harrell would like to be a head coach sometime,
yep.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's stuff like that. It's hard when you have a job. You have a good job. You know, you're at a top program and you're the defensive coordinator. Yeah, I mean, you already have a really good job. Sometimes it's hard to say, well, I have a really good job, but I want that job too, you know? So
yeah.
People look at it like, oh, he's just trying. I'm like, no, I mean, anyone, you want to move up if you want, you know, have an opportunity to.
Yeah. We have an email from Angel who says, hello, Trojans. I just wanted to mention that Vavae Malepea is extremely underrated considering that USC is extremely judged on the running back position. I'm feeling confident with the transfer, Keyonte Ingram, and now seniors Carr and Malepea, who I mentioned. Your thoughts? Fight on, Angel.
Hey, Angel. Yeah. If you remember the UCLA game, there was like basically one running back that did anything, right? Like he had 100 yards and everyone else had like negative yards or something. He's a proven commodity. And I think Mike Jenks knows what he can get out of him and what he can't, and it just depends on what you want to do. The problem is the running game as a whole has suffered, and even though Vi's had some, you know, great moments and things like that, I'm not saying the running game struggling is all on, you know, his shoulders or partially or whatever. You might have to change things up and do some different things. We saw Carr play well. We've seen Ingram, you know. They're probably going to use more of a rotation, so I think you're definitely going to see Vavae in there. Like, it'd be hard for me to picture like a backfield where Vavae's not getting significant carries in most games. He's healthy.
Yeah, the key word if he's healthy. I think that's the issue is that he hasn't been healthy, and that's hurt his development and hurt how many carries he can get. But the thing is I think the coaches understand what they get from him. He's a very reliable back. They know that he can pass protect, he can catch. And so, I mean, I don't think he's underrated. I think he's consistent and reliable, but he's not necessarily the flash you're going to see if Keenan Christian hits the hole. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's reliable, but he's not going to give you that excitement factor necessarily. He can, but it's not his game, if that makes sense.
Yeah. If you want to do like the food analogy, like,
sure, you're really packing
he's like, we'll go back to stew. Like, he could be like an awesome beef stew. I love beef stew. Do you ever make beef stew?
I love beef stew. It's a family recipe.
It's great. Oh, we'll have to get it sometime, maybe. Sure. If you'll share.
If I'll let you, yeah.
Your parents like me, I think, right? You know,
we'll see.
Where's it from? Mom's side or dad's side? Where is it?
Mom's side.
Mom's side. Okay. I think your mom likes me. Maybe not. I don't.
We'll answer this off air. No, just kidding. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like you have this great beef stew. Like, are you serving that at Wolfgang Puck's restaurant? You know, like, maybe not, but it's like, it's really good. It's awesome. It's a staple. It's there. There might be some like, oh, we're all going to use, you know, white asparagus that can only be grown in like the south of Italy for 1 month a year. Like, okay, that's like this fancier, you know, it's like you're using a wok instead of you know, a frying pan or something. Like it's something a little like, you know, a little fancier. Do you want the flashy new thing that comes in, like a Brandon Ingram or, you know, like a Keen Kristen who can do some you know, special things? Just a little more flash, but it depends what you want out of the run game. The problem is they just need some production. And you got to find, like we said with Clay McGuire, he's got to find those guys. You got a lot of tape on your new guys, on Campbell, Ingram.
Yep.
You've seen what your other guys can do. How do they mesh with this offensive line? How do they mesh with the way things are going? The quarterback, running back play, with the tight ends, all of that. I think that's going to be up to Jenks. You need to get more production out of the run game. RJ Abadia did a really good job breaking down some of the analytics for the run game. Basically, it was like pass game good, run game bad. Like that's if you just want to like take the elevator pitch view of it. Like, what was the stories about? Although the passing game was good and the running game was not. You got to change that.
Yeah, and I think to Angel's point, a lot of the run production was based on whether or not the back could shake the first guy that hit him, because he was getting his hands on the ball, and sometimes the defender was there already, you know, just because the offensive line was so porous in that sense. So, I think that the coaching staff understands the value that Vaimalapei brings in, because I mean, go back and see how many times he's gotten a start. He's usually the guy, because I think they think he's the most well-rounded, reliable back. So,
yeah, I think there's I'm not a great analytics person, which I have an engineering background. I just never like every time someone talks about analytics, I just feel like that's like you're opening up the Odyssey and you're like reading like on page 500, you start in the middle. I'm like, can you explain, maybe back up a little bit? And I've had people like write some analytics stuff for the site. They just assume everyone knows all the analytical terms. Like, you got to really explain some of this stuff to people. But so some of them don't know. But I think stuff rate is one of them where they're going to credit the first 4 yards of a run to like the offensive line or something like that. So if you get tackled for no gain, they're not going to say that's the running back's fault. They're going to say the offensive line didn't get any push. So I think there was a lot of that. But if that's still happening, that's going to be up to Jenks to figure out, okay, well, who's the best at avoiding the tackle in the backfield?
You got to work with what you have.
Yeah, who can turn the 1 yard loss into a 3 yard gain, which is going to help us immensely.
Which back in the day was a Marquis Stepp. Sometimes, you know, he was just that bruiser who, if there was a wall, he was going to try and find a way through it, you know? And so I think in some ways, Keontae Ingram kind of makes that up a little bit, because he just has an extra burst. Like he pops guys on the first contact. And so I think you get some back with him. But yeah, it's a hard road for the running backs in that sense. Not easy. Yes. We have a couple more questions. One is from our buddy Dan, class of 1962, and Oliver. He says, I was impressed with the comment from Curtis of Moreno Valley about the offense practicing against the BYU drop 8 defense and your response about the use of the scout team for that purpose. My question would be, what is the scout team doing during spring practice, and has USC scouted their opposition to know what defenses to practice and run for the coming schedule? I know that opponents can put in new wrinkles for each game, but most head coaches have a set offense like USC has the air raid. Why wouldn't you start practicing in the spring what you're doing to face in the fall? Fight on and win, Dan, class of 1962.
Hey, Dan. So we do call it a service team or a, you know, scout team, but there's not like some guys that are, you know, hey, call out the scout team, bring them out of the locker room. Like, it's the same people that are on the field right now. They just put a black jersey on or some other jersey
on. It's the non-starters.
Yeah.
And so the spring is where you're really trying to get development in, and you're trying to figure out your two deep. And so that's why I think, and if you listen to Todd Orlando, when he talked about it, he was like, we're really just focusing on us. And so that's why they're implementing what they need to do on defense. They're really trying to develop guys from the top to bottom on the depth chart. And then that's why fall camp, you start to have more competition, you get to the end of it, and then that's when you have the two deep, you kind of know where you stand on the roster. And from then on, it's kind of like the starters get the priority. They're going to get the most reps. They're going to get the most looks of what they're going to see on Saturday. And the guys who are representing the looks are the second team, third team guys. So that's who comprises the scout team. So it's kind of like you get your time in spring. You can play as much as you want to in your position and what you're doing. And then kind of fall camp, when it gets closer to the season, it's okay, you need to help your team out by mimicking a certain quarterback or this or that, you know?
Yeah, and Todd Orlando said this early on. He said, okay, you take over. You have all this, you know, new install you want to do, but you also want to, you know, say, hey, here's the culture we want. Here's what we want you to be doing. Here's the standard we want you to adhere to at practice. And he couldn't do that last fall, truncated fall camp, because you had a game coming up in a few weeks. So, Dan, to your point, that's what they had to do. They had to get ready for the next game.
Yeah.
And they didn't, you know, they had an original schedule. It changed once. It changed again. But in the spring, you know, are you going to really get ready for San Jose State right now? Or are you trying to get ready for Notre Dame? No. Like, you, the most important aspect is development, is, you know, the teaching aspect of what you want fundamental-wise, how you want guys to practice, putting that culture in, especially if you're trying to make a significant change. And for what we've seen in the spring, there was a significant change. So, yeah, yep. this isn't really the time. I'm, you know, if you had, like, back in the day, like when Miami and Florida State or whatever, I think they used to, like, open the season sometimes, or whenever, you know, there'd be, like, these huge opening games. Like, maybe, you know, like USC played Alabama to open the season, like, you know, a few years ago. You know, would there be like a period in spring practice that you were like doing a little something like get ready for Alabama thing? Like, maybe, but that's like if you have an opener against like a perennial power like that. Yeah. You know, I don't think you're doing anything like that for San Jose State.
Yeah, I mean,
in the spring,
this is the time when you want to have a really good foundation as far as techniques and fundamentals. I know those are cliches, but you do, because you have to throw so much at your team during the season that you want to make sure your foundation is good, and then you start prepping for guys. And also, if you start prepping for game plan in spring, how much of that are they going to remember come fall camp? You know, it's just, it's not, I think, as good of a use of time. And the coaches, mind you, are looking at tape, looking at their opponents and whatnot, but they're not installing anything in spring. You know,
yeah.
they're always game planning and whatnot, but when they choose to do it is probably more fall than spring.
Yeah, like you're getting ready. I mean, if I'm going to take like a golf lesson and I'm like going to like this specific course and I'm playing it in six, I'm going to Europe this summer and I'm going to, you know, go play some real specific course and I'm taking a lesson right now and the guy's telling me, okay, on the third hole, you want to make sure you know, use less than driver. You want to get it short of the water, whatever. Like, I'm probably not going to remember that 6 months from now, but if he's working on my swing, like my basic fundamental stuff, that's something I can bring to the course 6 months from now. Hopefully I'm better at it. And then when you get closer to the actual round, you can get some coaching up for things like that. So I like the way they're doing it. They're coaching them up, you know, the fundamentals up, and just how you want this team to practice. And then you can, when they get ready for an opponent, you've already set the standard of what you want.
Yeah, exactly. We have one final question, and it's kind of a complaint about the spring game from Maven Star, who said, whoever produced the Trojan spring game coverage should be fired. Viewers like me tuned in to see the game, all caps, see and watch all the new guys and returning vets, not to see labored, protracted, droning interviews with former players and others while the game is playing on split screen with no play-by-play. All caps, guys. We got to see Utah play. We got to see ASU play. There was play-by-play. We knew who the players were and who were making plays. The focus on the game, dipping into short interviews, not the dead opposite format inflicted on the Trojans Saturday. Typical national TV and Pac-12 network uses the opportunity to, quote-unquote, showcase crap coverage.
Hey,
Maven Star.
I don't have the Pac-12 network now. I didn't get to see it. Did you watch? You watched it, or
no? I didn't. I don't have a recording, and I was there live. So, but I did hear from people who did watch it, and they were frustrated. People were texting me during the game. Well, what's happening? I can't tell because they're talking to people, and I was like, well, it's like the third string quarterback, so I think you're okay. But I did hear from some fans that they were frustrated.
I mean, that's a problem. I get what you're saying, Maven Star. I mean, I think there's opportunities to show some of that stuff, especially if they were doing other spring games that were spring gamey. I mean, you know, you had Yogi Roth there. I know John Jackson, you know, he was one of the interviews. You know, he's recovering from his stroke that he suffered a few years ago. We haven't seen him really much, but he was up there in the booth. So, you know, they saw him, and that was an opportunity. They brought him in there. I didn't get to see all the other ones or what was going on. But, yeah, this is your only opportunity to kind of watch practice. I'd like for them to show practice and have opportunities to do these interviews, maybe not while the game is going on. So it just, you know, I'm not saying the Pac-12 network is terrible, but they don't always do the best job. And
you've
that's,
said that before.
I've said it before. But I like the people that, you know, work on it.
Yeah, no.
They've also laid off a ton of people that work on that
people,
stuff.
Yes.
So, you know, guys like Yogi are just trying to juggle all the social media stuff, everything that's going on there.
Yeah, and there's a lot going on.
But I would be Maven Star. I would be frustrated too. I'd want to see more of the game.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, how long did that go?
We did it. I feel like it was long.
Yeah, we were like hour 15 minutes.
Okay.
I didn't know if I was going to pass out like halfway through or not.
I'm proud of you. You are here.
I'm here. Again, how the sausage is made. I'm supposed to do the podcast with champions about an hour.
Oh,
I'm not sure if that's going to happen. I think I might just...
I think you should rest.
I think I'm going to rest because...
that might be good.
Sitting and talking is a little draining, you know. And that one is a lot of talking, a lot of, you know.
Yeah.
I can listen to you on this one. Yeah, there's banter. I got to disagree with David all
the
time.
You got
to
be witty. It's a whole thing.
Oh, man. It's just, you know, it's hard being funny all the time, Keely.
Yeah, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't know. But
I wouldn't know, but I would assume.
That was an opportunity for you to go, duh. But
if there's an opportunity to be self-deprecating, I'll take it.
Nice. All right, well, great stuff.
Thank you, Ryan.
We got two practices left.
Went by so fast.
It did. One we can't watch, one we can. It's on a Friday. So we should have like sort of a wrap-up report.
Yeah.
Next week, and we'll have our Tunnel Vision show
on
Sunday night. So that'll be the final spring practice report, and then kind of moving on through the offseason. But great questions, everyone out there. Thank you. Thank you for the reviews. Thanks for checking out Trader Joe's, our sponsor there. And thanks to Keely York, just crushing it as always. Really proud of my team. You're doing a great job. You know, Shotgun, Chris, Gerard, like all these guys. And, you know, RJ's been a nice addition, helping out and everything. So thank you guys for making my life a little easier.
Of course.
Well, that's going to wrap it up. Keely York, I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.